This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Businesses who want to go carbon neutral or negative go about it in a variety of ways. One is by purchasing carbon offsets. A few states offer programs to farmers and landowners that incentivizes sustainable practices with extra income from the purchase of carbon offsets. Indiana could be the next. Here with us to talk about the potential program is State Senator Mark Stoops. Welcome, Senator Stoops.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Also with us is Daniel Pointer, founder of the nonprofit Carbon Neutral Indiana. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Hi, thank you for having us on.
And to unpack some of the science around this is Jeff Dukes, director of the Purdue Climate Change Research Center. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Matt. Good to be here.
And finally, one of the farmers supporting this bill, Rick Clark. He's a regenerative farmer from Warren County, Indiana. Rick, thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Matt. Thank you very much.
If you have questions or comments for our panel today, they're ready for you. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We'll do our best to get it into the conversation and in front of our panel today. Again, 866-476-3881. Senator Stoops, we'll start with you. Can you tell us about this bill and what it would do?
Oh, sure. Well, the idea is that many of these companies that are buying carbon offsets to offset their carbon dioxide emissions are spending their money in other states. And really, we have some great resources for being able to sink carbon into the ground here and in forest in the state of Indiana. So we have over 5 million acres of forest land and 15 million acres of farm and ag land that can be used to sequester carbon. So it made sense to me that we could set up a system or make it easier for these landowners that own the forests and farms to get involved in this carbon offset market that's going on currently and is really expanding exponentially.
So in a lot of ways, Indiana's already doing this. This is just sort of an incentive to, I guess, quantify it and then market it?
Well, what we're not doing is actually being able to connect with these companies that have large budgets for carbon offsets. So we have landowners that are interested in doing it, and there are some not-for-profit systems set up, and there are many for-profit companies that are involved in, for instance, figuring out how much carbon value you have in your land, and then other companies that verify that scientifically. But it's difficult for these landowners, especially ones that own smaller parcels, to get involved in actually putting together packages and selling their carbon.
So I guess what I'm hearing is if you've got the resources, you can be assessed. Say you're a big farmer. You can pay for an assessment that would quantify the amount of carbon that you're sequestering, and then you could sell that even if you're in Indiana. And your bill would, I guess, just make that easier?
Right. So one part of this bill actually.
Did we lose the senator? I think we may have. Jeff Dukes, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Can you help us break this down while we wait on Senator Stoops to come back? What are some of the ways we can sequester carbon?
Well, it depends on whether you're talking about forests or farmlands. There's different things you can do in the different contexts. So in forests, you can basically create a forest where there isn't one now. So you're storing carbon in the trees that grow on the landscape. So you turn an agricultural field into forest. That's one way of storing a lot more carbon. You can also manage a forest differently. You can manage it so that the trees will grow faster, and that can also store more carbon than you would otherwise. Or you could, for instance, cut down fewer trees or lengthen the rotation time of the forest, lengthen the time between cuts, essentially. And that could also store more carbon than you would otherwise, because basically the trees are spending more time standing there taking up the carbon. So there's a variety of different options with forests. And then in farmlands, basically the concept is that you want to disturb the soil as little as possible and keep live roots in the soil for as much of the year as possible. So one great technique for storing more carbon in farmland soils is what's called cover crops, which is basically where you grow a crop that you don't intend to harvest, but you grow other plants between the times that you're growing the crops that you do intend to harvest, and those crops just cover the surface of the land. They prevent the soil from eroding. They hold the nutrients in place. They add more carbon to the soil because the plants are taking carbon out of the atmosphere through photosynthesis, turning it into sugars, and sending some of that carbon into the soil, either as different compounds that just sort of leak out of the roots, or when the roots die, they become soil organic matter. They become this, you know, a carbon-containing compound that's in there, basically making the soil healthier and more fertile. So a lot of these practices, they're good for the atmosphere in that they pull carbon out of the atmosphere and slow the rate of climate change. But at the same time, they're also making our landscape healthier. And in the case of the farmlands, they're making the soil healthier. They're increasing the potential for future yields on those farms. And they have lots of other benefits, like making the water cleaner as well. So a lot of the practices that we're talking about here in the context of climate change and minimizing CO2 emissions or pulling carbon out of the atmosphere, in fact, are good for a variety of other reasons. And so this bill is something that could just make it easier for people to put these sorts of practices in place. And it's also something that would give them a little bit more monetary incentive to take care of the land in a way that's good for them, but also good for everybody else, good for nature as well.
And Rick Clark, you're doing some of this. You're doing a lot of this. What would you say about the benefits of doing this aside from the benefits to the environment? How has your farm been helped by this?
Right. Well, currently we are not selling any carbon credits to anyone. It's such a young market, and we want to make sure that we position ourselves correctly. And that's why I'm really intrigued about this bill that Mr. Stoops is bringing. We like to look at things where we want to help the local community the best we can. So we try to buy local. Well, here, if you've got Indiana set up as the facilitator to monitor these credits and build the metrics that gather the data, we're working within the state of Indiana. That excites me to then have that trustworthy source there working. And yes, on our farm, we are headed toward organic. We're currently have acres certified, but it's beyond organic. We are doing what I call regenerative organic stewardship, and we are doing this with no tillage. So we are converting the farm. We are growing cash crops, and we are suppressing weeds with the cover crop cocktails that Mr. Dukes was describing. And the reason why all this fits together so well and it becomes synergistic is because the things that we're talking about to sequester carbon or grow carbon or slow down the release of carbon is exactly fitting in to the way that we're currently farming. So one of the questions that we're always asked about someone who's not doing cover crops is, what's it going to cost me? What are these cocktails going to cost? Well, these offsets that we're talking about creating that the state would pay us for, these carbon credits, would be a pretty much equivalent to some of these cocktails. So it kind of gets that farmer in a little bit more of a comfort zone of knowing now that he at least has some of his risk is being offset by the value of these carbon credits.
Well, you've been doing it for long enough. Senator Stoops, are you back now?
Yes, can you hear me?
I sure can. Sorry we lost you there. I'm talking with Rick right now about some of his farming practices. And Rick, I want to just stick with you for just a little bit. You've been doing this for a long time, but could you offer any sort of perspective to a farmer who is operating, I don't know what the word would be, traditionally, I suppose, as to the difficulty of adjustment, I guess, that it would take to get to where you are?
It takes, you're exactly right, Matt. It takes a willingness to change. We're not saying that the way the farmers are farming today is wrong. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is let's please step back and let's have the ability to change and let's try to incorporate some of these practices into this system. And now there's an opportunity to be financially rewarded to do some of these practices. Now, a lot of times, and we're in one of the best states in the union right here. Indiana is very progressive. There's a high percentage of farmers already doing some of these practices. Probably Indiana might be one of the largest percentage of doing that. So it's a good place for this bill to come to and to start. And again, change. We've got to be willing to look at different systems.
Rick Clark, how do you know that? Are you networking with other farmers? Do you see this trend happening? I mean, I'm not a farmer, so I'm not in the circles. Are you all kind of talking about this? Is that how you know that?
Yeah. There is some cliques out there where there are groups of people on email, mass emails going out to 25, 30, 40 people. You throw ideas around, you bounce ideas off. We have field days. We have informational webcasts. There's many locations that a person can go and find a lot of this stuff. I mean, the wonders of the web are unbelievable. A lot of the things that we're doing on this farm now are on the web. You can Google myself. I run under a social media handle of FarmGreen13. A lot of things can be seen online, and yes, there's plenty of opportunity. But you make a very good point, though. The support group to continue this on. Okay, so the farmer goes
just another 10 seconds, Rick. I'm afraid.
Okay, the farmer goes and hears someone speak. They get excited about doing these cover crops. It's totally foreign to them. They need that extra boost 6 months later to help them continue down the road.
We're talking about a potential program to offset carbon in Indiana, and we'll be back in 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about a bill that would incentivize farmers and landowners to account for carbon sequestration in farming and forests, among other things. And we have with us one of the bill's authors, State Senator Mark Stoops. We also have the founder of the nonprofit Carbon Neutral Indiana, Daniel Pointer. Jeff Dukes is also with us. He's the director of the Purdue Climate Change Research Center. And we also have a regenerative farmer from Warren County, Indiana, with us, Rick Clark. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. And we have a listener voicemail from Russ, who has a comment about a legume that he's curious about. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Russ Vernon from Yorktown, Indiana. I had always been curious about birdfoot trefoil, which is a legume. It's low growing. It stores nitrogen in its roots and nodules, and it's very pollinator friendly. So this could be planted in rows between rows of intended crops, and then the crops can be harvested and the birdfoot trefoil left behind. The flowers are like peas and they're bright yellow, so very showy as well. Thank you. Bye bye.
Sounds like something for Jeff Dukes. What do we know about that plant that Russ is talking about and its ability to maybe help us out with this?
Well, it's I think I'd actually maybe throw this to Rick because he's working with a lot of different combinations of species on the ground, but it is certainly less likely to compete for nitrogen with the crops than some other species. I don't know of any studies that have been using that in conjunction with other species as a cover crop specifically, but it certainly is an interesting thought.
Rick, any experience with birdfoot trefoil?
I do not, but I love the concept and I love the idea. And if I was to throw one thing out, I would throw out that I might mix also with that buckwheat. buckwheat is another tremendous early flowering and a great pollinator for our friendly bees and butterflies. But great comment, and I will look into it. Do more research. Thank you.
All right. Daniel Pointer, let's bring you in here and get some big picture going. Can you tell us about the mandate from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change?
Sure. Thank you. So I had not heard of the IPCC. It took a while. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of listeners don't know about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. But essentially, it is the largest group of scientists ever assembled in human history, which is awesome. And in 2018, they put out a report that basically rang the alarm bell. Humanity has to cut emissions 45% by 2030. We have to. And ultimately, the entire world has to be net neutral by 2050. So net neutral means we'll still continue to create greenhouse gas emissions, but we also have to sequester that amount. So, you know, the result will be a zero. And the reason why this matters from a human perspective, the World Bank said there could be up to 140 million climate refugees in the next couple decades. A lot of people don't know this, but the 20th chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff appointed by President Trump, Mark Milley, he commissioned a report called Implications of Climate Change for the U.S. Army. And people chimed in from NASA, State Department, Air Force, Defense Intelligence Agency, National Guard, and the Army. And what was their finding? One of the findings was that the U.S. military could collapse within 20 years because of the stresses put on it by climate change. For example, there's 160 million people in Bangladesh, half are at sea level. When the sea rises, where will those 60 million people go? Pakistan and India, their neighbors, have nuclear weapons. They're not just going to let 60 million people in. So I think people know the stakes are high. I don't think people know that particular threat. But the general idea is that we have to get moving and, you know, encouraging people to pay for carbon sequestration is basically the next thing. It's kind of like most decent people recycle, most decent people pay someone to clean up their garbage. In the next couple of years, you're going to see pretty much everybody becoming carbon neutral and participating in this.
So Daniel, you're saying that attitudes seem to be changing. And I mean, I would imagine that with programs like this kind of coming to the fore and being considered here in Indiana as well, that it's coming down to money. I mean, money talks. Companies are spending money to offset their carbon emissions. So I don't know. Who are some of the big names and what are they doing?
Well, yeah, there is big money. So there's over 1,500 major companies that have either gone carbon neutral or made net zero commitments. I mean, we've got in our own backyard Salesforce, the largest tower in Indianapolis, Google, Apple, Microsoft, Ford Motor Company, AT&T just announced they're going to be carbon neutral soon. And I was on the phone with FedEx. They just made they're investing $1.5 billion into Indiana. And I asked their sustainability director, how can we make sure you succeed? And he said, get as many landowners plugged into carbon markets as possible. I said, why? Why does FedEx care about landowners in Indiana? And he said that they're under increasing pressure from their customers, their employees, and investors to become net neutral. But it's difficult because we don't have electric airplanes, right? So they have to invest in projects that sequester their carbon footprint. And historically, farmers have not been plugged in like they could be. And so he sees it as a huge opportunity for FedEx to become net neutral. And there's so many other examples like that. That's from the corporate world. But from the religious world, I was interested to find that the Presbyterian Church, in 2006, their 217th General Assembly, quote, strongly urged all Presbyterians to immediately aspire to carbon neutral lives. And I know President Mitch Daniels of Purdue is Presbyterian. The Catholic Church recently, the Pope said that this decade, 2020, it'll be they're encouraging all Catholics to become carbon neutral by 2030. That's 1.2 billion people. So the forces of the world are moving on this and quickly.
And so, Senator Stoops, that brings us back to Indiana and what we're trying to do here. So where and how are these entities spending this money to offset carbon? Who's getting it and how would this bill, I guess, put money in the pockets of Hoosiers?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's kind of an important part of the bill. The fact that you have these buyers who are everywhere from the largest companies down to even homeowners, and I think Daniel can tell you that. There are groups of homeowners that even try to do this. They're the buyers. The sellers are the people that have the property that can soak up that carbon dioxide, forest and farmland. In between that is the middlemen. So those are the technical advisory professionals. So you get what's called project managers. So if you're Toyota and you want to invest for carbon offsets, you'd hire a project manager to analyze a property and tell you how much carbon that property could sequester. And then there's a third-party verifier. So again, another operation who would verify that was a correct amount of carbon offset. These are big companies. They're not messing around. This isn't like it's kind of an estimate. They want to know exactly, and then they use that because they've budgeted money for it, and they use that when they're reporting their carbon offset. So there are a lot of for-profit businesses getting involved as those middlemen, and a lot of not-for-profits that are getting involved. So there are increasingly a lot of players in there. Now, I think Rick Clark mentioned that he'd been approached for his property to sell carbon offsets. And I think one of the important things this bill does is these players in the market need to register with the state. Not need to, they can. It's voluntary. They can register with the state, and then the state would publish this registry of verified operators. So if you were a landowner and you wanted to have your land checked out for carbon, you would contact one of these project management companies. Otherwise you wouldn't know where to go. You wouldn't know where to go. So you might go to the state. State would have a website. They would say, this person is registered with us, and we have verified that they are using established practices and they're a legitimate operator. Then you'd have to go and find a third-party verifier. So again, the state could keep a registry of these verified legitimate companies, and you as a landowner would have a place to go. And that doesn't exist right now. So again, this is it's completely voluntary. So if you were a project manager, you could operate in the state without being registered. But my feeling is these legitimate companies would want to make sure that they had registered with the state. And the proposal in my bill draft would have that operated under the Indiana Department of Agriculture. And then all the money for operating the program would come from those registration fees. So it would be designed so there wouldn't be any overhead costs for the state. This is all something that could be maintained. And so that way you have the sellers, which are Indiana property owners and resource owners, being able to get together and find the middlemen and even find the purchasers for their carbon. So it would also help reduce some of the roadblocks to doing that. And there would be a council set up to advise the Department of Ag on best practices.
We're talking about a bill that would allow for a carbon sequestration program in Indiana. And Senator Mark Stoops is one of the bill's authors. And this bill is a lot like one Senator Mike Braun filed in Washington. What do you know about that one? What would it do? And I guess what's the status of that one?
Right. Senator Braun's bill does something very similar to this part of the bill draft. And I and others met with Senator Braun to talk to him about his bill, because when you're researching a bill like this, you want to figure out what other states are doing, what other legal language is in existence. And coincidentally, Mike Braun's bill was perfect for a similar, smaller operation that the state of Indiana could run. Senator Braun's bill deals with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and has that system where the operators could register and be verified by the U.S. government. Unfortunately, as Senator Braun says, it could be years before the U.S. government moves forward with something like that. And by having states implement these programs, the more states that do it, the more pressure on the federal government to implement something similar. And then there is another part. There is another part of this draft that deals specifically with some programs for providing funds for the Benjamin Harrison Trust Fund, and that's a fund that the Department of Natural Resources uses to buy parks in forest land, and that money's also granted out to land trusts. So if you have a land trust operating in your area, they could come to a fund like this and actually use that to offset costs to purchase property. And then on the ag side, there's a very similar, it's the Clean Water Indiana Fund, actually gives farmers money, as Rick Clark said, to give them that the resources to actually shift their operation. Sometimes it's very difficult to just go from one system to another, and this would provide funding and the ability to do that.
We have another listener voicemail that I want to get to. This one's from Larry. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, this is Larry. Question I have is this. This all sounds like a very good concept. We know that carbon storage and sequestration is going to be needed as part of the overall strategy to get us to a carbon neutral situation. The question, though, is whether the offset capacity of the state should be reserved for business operations with carbon emissions that are very difficult to abate. It seems like the bill, as it's been described so far, might end up incentivizing the use of all offset capacity for operations with emissions that could be readily abated. So that's the question I pose. Thanks.
Okay, I think I can understand where Larry's coming from. So I guess, Daniel Pointer, I guess one of the criticisms of this could be that this is just a way for businesses to spend their way out of guilt, perhaps. Would it be better for these carbon offsets to be offered to, I guess, specific businesses doing specific things, perhaps?
Yeah, that's a great question about the capacity of carbon sequestration in Indiana specifically. And, you know, is it a limited amount? And shouldn't we reserve that for people who have already reduced their direct emissions? Last fall, I didn't know anything about carbon offsets. I just pretty much dismissed it as greenwashing, you know. But I decided to research it, and I printed off every white paper I could find. And I have a three-ring binder that's like 4 inches thick. And I spent about 100 hours researching the topic. And it can get really complicated. But, you know, mortgages are complicated, too, and they're important, and they help the country run. So I would encourage people to dive in. And if they want to, I can share information about where to go to research this. But I thought it was about greenwashing, right? But what I discovered was that there's some major benefits to carbon offsets. I think the big thing is that people think it's a way to greenwash. But there's a public audit trail, and all the documentation by all the players is available to read online. It's actually really good education. There's just also this idea of buying one's way out of responsibility, kind of like buying indulgences in the Middle Ages. A really powerful way to think about it is, no, it's taking responsibility. It's internalizing the true costs. So there's a really short story I always like to tell people. Imagine a husband and wife, and the man swears like a sailor, and he has for 20 years. And his wife is like, I'm sick of it, Larry. And he goes, and she says, you're out of here. I'm leaving. He says, no, baby, please stay. I'll be different. And she's like, I've heard that before, Larry. I've been begging you for 20 years to stop swearing. It's bad for the kids. And he goes, no, it really will be different. And she goes, you know what? It will be different. Every time you swear, put $20 in this jar. And he goes, F that. And she says, $20 now. And when he puts the money in the jar, it hurts because he thinks of the beer he could have had. You know what I mean? And that's internalizing the cost. How many environmentalists have done unpaid emotional work for years, right? Just like that wife, they're getting burned out. When people become carbon neutral, and you do that by investing in projects that sequester your carbon footprint, you're internalizing a cost that you used to externalize. And as far as the potential of Indiana to sequester, we've talked about Indiana forests and farms. But one other cool thing about carbon offsets is it's just a legal and financial fiction, just like a mortgage. And what it does is it allows innovation to bloom. There's about 200 different methods by which you can create an offset and verify it and sell it on the open market. 200 different ways. Every one of those ways should have entrepreneurs working on it and making businesses in Indiana. The last piece I'll say about all this that's really exciting has to do with methane abatement. There's 800,000 cows in Indiana.
10 seconds.
And one of the most recent methods that was approved is an all-natural supplement for those cows. It's garlic and citrus. You feed it to the cow, and it reduces methane like 30%, which is a big deal because methane is a really bad greenhouse gas, right?
Daniel, we'll have to end it right there. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about a statewide program to sequester carbon in Indiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on carbon sequestration and a new bill that would start up a carbon offsets program in Indiana. It would incentivize farmers and landowners to operate sustainably. And we have with us the bill's author, State Senator Mark Stoops. We also have the founder of the nonprofit Carbon Neutral Indiana, Daniel Poyner. Jeff Dukes is also with us. He's the director of the Purdue Climate Change Research Center. And we also have a regenerative farmer with us from Warren County, Rick Clark. As always, we would love your questions and comments. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. Jeff Dukes, I want to take a look, a little bit of a closer look at the role agriculture can play in producing and also sequestering carbon. Just before the break, we heard Daniel Poyner making the point about a supplement that can be given to cows to reduce their methane output. But there are all sorts of other ways that farms can produce and also trap carbon. And we've heard about a few of them so far this hour, cover crops and a few others. Do we have time to go through the whole list? What do you know?
I don't know if we have time to go through the whole list, but some basics are have to do with, for instance, fertilizer management. So a lot of the greenhouse gas emissions from farms come off as not the gases we normally talk about, like methane or really carbon dioxide, the big one, but nitrous oxide. So when you fertilize the soil and there are wet soils and there aren't many plant roots there to take up that fertilizer, then you get a big burst of nitrous oxide that goes right up into the atmosphere, and you also get nitrogen lost into the waterways. But the nitrous oxide is a powerful greenhouse gas and really contributes a big fraction of agriculture's overall contribution to climate change. And so if you can apply fertilizer more judiciously, less of it in a more targeted manner, or really just reduce it entirely depending on your farming practices, then you can dramatically reduce your nitrous oxide emissions from the landscape. And so that is one thing that that is a change, but something that there are more technologies now available for farmers to use to control that fertilizer application, or in the case of the sort of agriculture Rick's doing, just dramatically limit it. So that's another way forward in agriculture where you can minimize its contribution to the overall problem. We talked about a lot of practices that store carbon on land or minimize carbon emissions, so things like no-till or adding cover crops. Those are also really important and can be applied to many, many acres across Indiana. So they do have those practices on their own have the potential to offset maybe something like 500,000 cars emissions. That would have to happen on a widespread scale to do that, but it's a meaningful number. Now, one thing I think to keep in mind is that the potential for something like that, for storing carbon in the agricultural landscape per acre, is a lot less than the potential for sequestering carbon in forests. But nonetheless, those actions on farmland have a variety of benefits beyond just the carbon savings or the carbon sequestration that are important and beneficial.
Well, let's talk about some of the forestry approaches. I mean, In what ways can we manage forests that would have a big impact on carbon sequestration and could potentially, the state could potentially benefit from this bill that we're talking about? How do we do it?
Well, I guess the first one would be to protect forests that might otherwise get cut. So if there's a forest that that is slated for being taken down and it can be protected, now that can potentially, you know, keep carbon in place. There are risks, though, with programs like this when you're looking at them globally, though, which are that, you know, by protecting a forest here, sure, that carbon stays in place, but maybe somebody one or two states over cuts down a forest there to supply that need for wood, and so you're not actually saving carbon in the big picture. You are storing more here, but you're just pushing that logging, essentially, to somewhere else. But if you can take parcels of land that you would be managing, or maybe that wouldn't be very effectively managed here, and manage them differently, maybe pay more attention to how you're thinning them so that the trees grow faster, or grow them over longer rotations so the trees, on average, are across many years, the trees at a given location are larger and hold more carbon, or you know, reduce the, well, also, I guess, in reducing the frequency of logging, you're likely to reduce some of the damage that you might do essentially to the soils in the area and minimize some of the losses of carbon you might get from the soils with those associated activities. You know, there are a variety of things you can do. And then, of course, you can also grow new forest where you wouldn't have had it before. So you could encourage landowners to allow some of their land to go into forest. And particularly, you know, in some regions, that might be very useful habitat and provide a lot of benefits that way. So there are many different avenues you could take, but the bottom line is that there's a lot of carbon stored in trees, particularly in mature forests. So as those forests grow up, since trees by dry weight are 50% carbon, you have a lot of carbon sitting there on the landscape as you allow a forest to become mature. And so any way that you can figure out to essentially create more of that mature forest is likely to be a way that's going to store more carbon on the landscape.
We have a listener voicemail that I want to get to from Thomas. He has a question for the panel. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Thomas from Indianapolis, and my question is, if you have registered forest and you're getting tax breaks for that, can you also register for this carbon whatever and get those credits as well? Thank you.
Senator Stoops, can you double dip?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's a good opportunity for classified forest owners to get some additional revenue from their properties. So right now in Indiana, if you have a classified forest, you get a property tax break. And that's pretty much it. So if you're going to manage your property over a long period of time, maybe do selective logging. But in this case, you'd be able to also sell your carbon offsets. And about 90% of the forest land in Indiana is privately owned. So this is pretty important. But I said we have 5 million acres of forest in Indiana, and that basically, each acre can store 6 tons of carbon. So overall, we're looking at 20 to 30 million tons of carbon stored annually in the state. So if you try to turn that into a cost per ton of carbon sequestration, and you're looking at, you know, $5 or $10 per ton stored, then you can imagine that those landowners can get some significant additional revenue for their properties. As Jeff Dukes talked about, how they manage the property could also increase the amount of carbon that's sequestered. So they could make the decision, okay, well, do I want to log this property intensively, or do I want to do selective logging and gain more revenue on the carbon sequestration side? And also keep in mind that when furniture is made from hardwood, that's also that carbon is still sequestered in that wood. Forests store about half of their carbon underground as well, which is an important part of their ability to offset carbon dioxide. But if you if you're a classified forest owner in Indiana, the average size of a parcel is about 20 acres. So not enough for you to actively get involved in the market unless you join with other forest owners in an aggregated block. And so one of the things that this bill would do would be to make that easier to do. So you could get a lot of landowners, forest owners, or even farmers grouping together and then going through the process and getting their carbon sequestration revenue that way.
We're talking about a program that would incentivize carbon sequestration in Indiana and allow Indiana landowners and farmers to sell carbon offsets. We have a question from Kenny on Twitter, and Senator Stoops, I'm going to send this to you. Kenny says, markets only work when players trust the value-setting process. That requires auditing. Who will audit this market? Markets don't operate and audit themselves. We've kind of touched on this already, Senator Stoops, but I want to make sure that we come back around to it.
Yes, and that is a critical part of the process is the third-party auditor. So this is a auditor that's separate from the buyer, they're separate from the landowner, the seller, and they're also separate from the project manager that basically does the research on the carbon value of your property. And I think Daniel would be an excellent person to answer this question, but it basically means that third-party auditor is a bit like an accountant that has to do an independent audit of books. And that maintaining that professional auditor that is separate, that is scientifically based, is critical to the whole program.
Anything to add, Daniel?
Well, the main thing is just to mention the scale. So before, if you wanted to do a verified carbon forest project, startup costs are about $250,000 on up, right? So that's why the small parcel owners can't get involved. So the genius of this proposed legislation is that using new methodologies created by the Nature Conservancy and others pioneered in Pennsylvania, we can aggregate parcels, and all these little landowners can come together and get the benefits of economies of scale. Which is really exciting,
Senator Stoops. Again,
and how are the auditors verifying?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
By the way, how is that?
Yeah, part of that $250,000 startup cost is just the verification. For example, so you don't just plant a bunch of trees in your backyard. It's a serious effort. For example, you can't just sell organic food. You have to be verified, and there's certification fees. So in the case of a forest, you've got to put together a project document, which may be 100 pages. Plus, you got to send it to a verifier like Vera. They certify about 60% of all voluntary carbon offsets on the market. Vera gives it the thumbs up or the thumbs down, and they evaluate it based on many criteria. Professor Dukes mentioned the technical term is leakage. You know, if somebody, you could prevent, you could prevent logging here, but want to just leak somewhere else. And there's other criteria, like it needs to be relatively permanent. It needs to be additional, like they wouldn't do it otherwise without the money. So once they give the thumbs up, then you can start the project, and then you have to have somebody come visit it. You know what I mean? You have to monitor it over the years. So that's a little bit about the verification process.
Senator Stoops, I want to talk a little bit about this before we wrap up today, and that is the status of the partisan divide over issues like this. Of course, this bill, the one that you're will be put toward the General Assembly next year. Again, it's a lot like one that Senator Mike Braun filed in Washington. That one's going to take a while. And Senator Braun said that if the states get behind this, that would give the momentum to get the federal government behind this idea. And he's a Republican. You're a Democrat. What would you say is the status of the partisan divide on these kinds of issues?
Well, it was interesting. When I filed this bill at last session, I was able to get a number of Republican authors signed onto the bill. For instance, Senator Sue Glick, who's the chair of Natural Resources Committee, and if your listeners can think that the chair is a very powerful position, and Senator Glick, as chair of Natural Resources, was an author on the bill, as well as Senator Lysing, who's the chair of Agriculture, and again a Republican. Senator Mesmer, who's the chair of environmental affairs, also a Republican, was an author on the bill. Senator Bassler and Senator Ruckelshaus were on the bill as well. We had House sponsors, so some Republicans in the House that supported it were Representative Wilkins, very conservative guy. Not you wouldn't call him the biggest environmentalist in the legislature, and he was a sponsor of the bill on the House side. Representative Leahy, again a farmer himself and the chair of Agriculture and Rural Affairs on the House side, is actually the one that held this interim study committee. And I think we had a lot of very wide range of support. So normally we have, for instance, Indiana Forest Alliance, who's a forest protection group at loggerheads. I don't know, I guess that's a pun, with the Hardwood Lumbermen's Association. And both of those groups supported this bill. Manufacturers Association, who of course has members who want to buy these carbon offsets, supported it. At the same time, Nature Conservancy supported it. So I think it's a very nonpartisan concept. You have a lot of the property that's owned in the state by these landowners are owned by farmers and classified forest owners. It's all private property, and this is just another way that they can make revenue on their land. So none of it it's all voluntary. It's voluntary for any companies that are interested in buying. It's voluntary to the property owners. They decide how much carbon offset they want to sell off their property. They decide if they want to change their mode of operation. And the state is there just to make it an easier process and to make sure that the players are all legitimate.
Because just another,
it's a big business.
But, just another minute left.
I don't know if I have a minute.
I want to go here with you, Senator. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're retiring at the end of this year, so you won't be around when this is being voted on next year if it gets a vote. Knowing what you know about how the Indiana General Assembly operates and the political makeup, I don't know, what could you say about the bill's chances? It sounds like you got a lot of bipartisan support.
I do, and I definitely have some interested legislators who are going to be working on this bill next year. So I'm very excited that it should move forward. I don't think there are many downsides to this. And with the current budget, with no money for additional programs, it's important that this pays for itself. And that's how it's designed.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today on this very big, very important topic. State Senator Mark Stoops. Thank you, Senator Stoops.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for covering the topic.
Daniel Pointer is the founder of the nonprofit Carbon Neutral Indiana. Thanks to you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Jeff Dukes is the director of the Purdue Climate Change Research Center. Much appreciated, Jeff.
Thanks, man.
Rick Clark is a regenerative farmer from Warren County, Indiana. Rick, thanks for your perspective.
Matt, it was a pleasure to be here, and this is a very important topic, and I thank you for making it public. Appreciate it.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Thanks to our environmental reporter, Rebecca Thiel, for reporting on this. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. I'm Matt Pelser. Thank you for listening today. This is All In.